25 years ago this week, Los Angeles was burning. Race relations and tensions between residents and police in the city were already simmering, even before a jury in Simi Valley delivered a not guilty verdict for four Los Angeles police officers who were caught on videotape beating motorist Rodney King. The Los Angeles Police Department was later criticized for not being prepared for the rioting that followed, ultimately leaving 55 people dead and hundreds of buildings burned. But KCSB's Lisa Osborne spoke with a retired Los Angeles deputy chief of police who said he was training his officers in the weeks ahead of the Rodney King beating verdicts. Michael Hillman was a lieutenant with the Los Angeles Police Department when the rioting erupted, and he was a commanding officer in the effort to try and rein in the violence and restore peace in the city. Hillman begins by explaining some of the backstory conflicts that were going on in Los Angeles in the days and months before the violence erupted.
There was a tremendous amount of political tension within the city of Los Angeles. The political tension was a result of Chief Gates at the time, who was our chief of police, that was involved in less than a cooperative relationship with the mayor, who was Tom Bradley. And the city council felt that the chief of police had too much power, and what was being put on the ballot was a proposition that would allow the chief of police to have term limits, which they do have now. And of course, at the time, Gates did not have term limits. So he could pretty much operate as an independent, very similar to the way the sheriff operates within the county. So in addition to the political climate, there was a great deal of racial tensions that were going on within the community. LAPD was looked upon as trying to deal with the number of gangs and the increase of narcotics and so forth as being overly oppressive. We had operations like Operation Hammer, which we would send police officers into the streets and they would go out and round up gang members and try to arrest them. And they would arrest them and try to essentially put a stop to a lot of the violence that was going on within the streets. Well, in the course of that, there were a great deal of use of force incidents that took place. And so it was almost an attitude of, it was the community against the police in some ways, because the police were looked upon at that time as being very heavy-handed. Now, I mean, that's the sense that one would get. However, I think that there was some, at the time, I believe that there were efforts that were being made to work with a lot of the community members that were in the South Central Los Angeles, primarily the African American community. There was that, plus the relationships with the police, but the internal relationships within the community and the racial tensions between some of the Korean merchants and the African American community following an incident where a teenager by the name of Letitia Harlan walked into a Korean-owned business, and there was a dispute over goods, and the owner shot and killed Letitia Harlan. So by the time you coupled the shooting of Letitia Harlan and you looked at the relationships or lack of relationships between the police department and the community, and then certainly the activity that was going on between the mayor and the chief, it created a pretty significant barrier to being able to have any kind of a relationship with the community. So along comes March the 3rd of 1991, and the pursuit that ends up with George Holliday filming the actions of the LAPD officers that they're dealing with trying to take him into custody. Rodney King was struck with batons in somewhere in the vicinity of about 50 times, and there were probably 20 officers present at the time, and under the supervision of Stacy Kuhn. Following that particular incident, then, as you remember, that the, or may not remember, but that videotape was delivered by George Holliday to KTLA, and it was released to the public. The officers that were involved in this were Stacy Kuhn and Lawrence Powell, Timothy Wynn, Brazino, and they were indicted by the Los Angeles grand jury in connection with the beating. On or about May the 10th now of 1991, my memory serves me correctly, a grand jury refuses to indict 17 officers who stood by at the King beating and did nothing. So there was, in essence, bystander liability. So along comes November of 91, and Superior Court Judge Weisenberg orders the trial of the four officers that were charged in the King beating, Powell, Brazino, et cetera. So April the 29th, well, between November 91 and April of 92, I was a lieutenant within Metropolitan Division. And in that capacity, Metropolitan Division within LAPD is the unusual occurrence response force for the department. It handles all of the crowd management, all of the SWAT issues, any high-risk type of incident that LAPD would be involved in. And I was one of the platoon lieutenants. And after the March 3rd, 91 incident all the way up through November, Chief Gates at that time had promoted the commanding officer of Metropolitan Division, who was a captain, to commander. And the assistant chief of police had directed that I be the acting commander of the division. So at that particular point, based upon everything that I told you that were precursors to what was going on, the attacks on police officers, the perceived racial injustice and the perceived excessive force by LAPD, it was well known by my colleagues within Metropolitan Division and myself that this was going to end up in a situation where if these officers were found not guilty as a result of this trial, that there would potentially be a riot. And so the assistant chief at that point, working with Chief Gates, had recommended that the department carefully start to prepare for the events of a potential not guilty verdict if it did occur. So with that in mind, we in Metropolitan Division had started off with training all of our resources in crowd management and crowd control techniques. Now, we didn't have a lot of safety equipment at the time. We didn't have ballistic vests. We didn't have ballistic helmets. But there were a very high proliferation of gangs. And there were these gang convoys that would move around the city and terrorize people. And it was just allowed to occur because of the proliferation of them, the fact that the gang members wanted to have some perceived justice with law enforcement. So we felt that this was going to be an all-out confrontation. So essentially what I did, along with my other colleagues, the other lieutenants within Metro, and by the way, we were probably about 300 officers strong at that time, we reconfigured the organization into what we call tactical support elements so that we would be fast-moving, quick-acting strike teams that could get in and to be able to control a crowd or to be able to control a sniper situation or to be able to control a violent confrontation amongst gang members. We had to move in a lot of different directions. And in doing that, the preparations that we had to do with LAPD were pretty extensive. We spent close to 2 weeks preparing ourselves in terms of training down at Todd Shipyards down in Long Beach, to where we quietly trained ourselves because the department LAPD did not want to be looked upon as forecasting that there was in fact going to be a riot. They wanted to keep very, very quiet preparations in place. And at that time, the assistant chief had directed a lot of the commanding officers to seek guidance from the Metropolitan Division personnel, which was us, to help provide them with some training. And we did provide some divisions with training, but not very many of them opted to participate.
Was it Chief Gates who didn't want officers out on the streets?
Well, he wanted it both ways. He wanted the officers out on the streets, but he didn't want it done in such a manner as it was going to create the notion that the officers were going to be found not guilty, and it was creating a police state type of mentality. He wanted a balanced approach to it. In any event, it was probably about a week before the riots, and I reached out to the governor's office of California, Office of Emergency Services, and asked if I could borrow about 300 ballistic helmets and flak vests for Metropolitan Division officers. And so I flew up to San Luis Obispo late at night one night and filled up an LAPD helicopter with vests and with helmets and flew them back and had our people, you know, prepared to wear them and don them should the need arise. Well, then following that, there had been a relationship worked out with the courts to where the courts would notify us when or about when a verdict would come down so that we would be able to be in place. So that the position that I took as a commanding officer of Metropolitan Division was to have the strike teams that we had prepared in terms of Metropolitan Division prepared to deploy during the day that would have AR-15s, which would be capable of countering the level of violence that we thought, being capable of handling response to search and find situations to where we had canines, and we wouldn't use canines in a crowd control situation. And we had horses that were assigned to our particular division, but horses were inappropriate to use as a tool during this event if it turned into an all-out riot. The conversation I had now was with my chain of command and my deputy chief. And as the acting commander, I said I wanted to deploy our personnel during the day. He said no, because riots don't happen during the day. And I said, but I want to be in a position to where we can have a first strike capability and have them in positions to where I can bring them to attention if I have to very quickly. I had armored vehicles that were in place because we expected a shooting confrontation from these gang members if a riot was going to break out. But I wanted to be able to pick and choose the tools based upon the level of violence that we were going to see so that we didn't have to over-deploy, but I wanted to be able to be deployed at the ready. And I told the deputy chief, I said, although riots don't occur during the day necessarily, they are certainly in a position where if we need to, I can extend end of watches and have people be able to be in position and be in place where they need to be at the time they need to be there. And that was denied. And it got to be a pretty tense conversation I was having because I felt very strongly about the fact that this was something that needed to be done and needed to be done now. So ultimately that did not occur. And so later on in the afternoon of April the 29th of 92, at about 3 o'clock in the morning in about Normandy and Florence, as a result of a prior incident that happened, there was a lieutenant and other officers that responded to a basically just an all-out anarchy and free-for-all and beatings of people, including several people that were trapped in the streets. And ultimately, as the incident started probably about 3:30 in the afternoon or so, that at Florence and Normandy, where we had Reginald Denny that was pulled from his truck, there was a strike team of Metropolitan Division personnel that we sent in to essentially attack that problem. The problem that started to develop is that LAPD had withdrawn their troops from that particular division and had withdrawn their troops from that particular location. And I mean, there was absolutely no visible presence of LAPD at Florence and Normandy.
And was Rodney King beaten at Florence and Normandy? Is that why Reginald Denny was dragged out of his truck?
No. Rodney King was arrested in the Foothill Division, which is a considerable distance from Florence and Normandy. Florence and Normandy just happened to be the flashpoint where a couple of LAPD officers, after the verdict, responded to Tom's Liquor and several other incidents that were going on in the vicinity of Florence and Normandy, to where they were pulling people out of meaning the community and some of the African-American people that were very frustrated were pulling people out of their cars and beating them. So there was no relationship between the two locations. It just happened to be Florence and Normandy was the flashpoint of it. So none of this at this particular point was working. Now, from my perspective, I had some on-duty resources, and I had one platoon strike team that I could send over to Florence and Normandy, and that was D platoon. And they did. They went over there and they tried to establish some sort of control, but by then it was out of control because an incident commander from 77th had pulled resources away from it. We ended up for the next probably 5 days of intense fighting, ended up trying to bring about some peace and calm to not only Los Angeles, but L.A. County. I mean, we were involved with our brothers and sisters from the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, L.A. City Fire Department, CHP, and ultimately the National Guard. Everybody knows now, and since then, there was probably, in the vicinity of probably 50 people that were dead and over 2,000 injured, probably 1,000 buildings that were destroyed and over $1 billion in damages. We made some arrests within Metropolitan Division, and we had to use force under some pretty extremist situations. And all in all, it was a very sad day for the Los Angeles Police Department, the community within the city of Los Angeles, the county of Los Angeles, the state of California, and several other municipalities throughout the United States. But since then, there has been a whole shift in dynamics as to how we deal with riots and crowd control.
That is retired Los Angeles Police Department Deputy Chief Michael Hillman speaking about his experience of serving as a police commander during the 1992 Los Angeles riots. Tomorrow on the KCSB 5 o'clock newscast, you'll hear from a newscaster who worked at a Los Angeles radio station that was located in the thick of the deadly violence.